Hey guys, it's Anthony Bandiero, attorney and senior legal instructor for Blue to Go Law Enforcement Training, bringing you a great webinar. If you're joining us, please recognize that this is a live webinar with several hundred people that are watching this, and they're going to have some questions. So that means if I look over to my right, your left, if I look over to my right, that means I'm looking at the chat board to see if anybody has any questions for me. All right, let's get into this. So quick disclaimers. Laws and agency SLPs may be more restrictive. That means that I'm going to teach you what I think that the law is in all 50 states. Well, the Fourth Amendment, right? But sometimes states can be more restrictive. You know, you have your Washingtons, your Oregons, your New Mexicos, your New Jerseys. They can be more restrictive in the law. But generally speaking, what I'm talking about today is going to be the same for every state. If you have any doubts with the legality of your actions, push up the state, push up the chain. And finally, this course is legal education, not legal advice. I'm an attorney, but I'm not your attorney. So if I say something in here and your local attorney's like, you know what, I don't like it, and I'm not going to take the case. That's their prerogative, right? That's what they get paid to do. All right. So we're going to talk about privacy. Cat of the bag. What do we mean by cat of the bag, right? These are basically private searches. If you want to know real quick what the hell we're talking about tonight, it's private searches. And what can you do when you have a private searches? Well, first of all, in order to even establish what we're talking about here, you got to know what privacy is under the Fourth Amendment. Okay, so the Fourth Amendment protects, right, persons, houses, papers, and effects. And one of the things it protects against is when police, i.e. you, violate a person's reasonable expectation of privacy. And where do we get this test? Where do we get this standard of privacy? Well, it comes from CATS. And what CATS tells us is that, you know, if the government invades that privacy, it can be a search under the Fourth Amendment. And if it is, it might need to be justified under the Fourth Amendment. So what happened in CATS briefly is that CATS is a bookmaker in LA, and he uses a telephone booth to make his wagering phone calls. The FBI put a listening device on top of his phone booth while he was in it. And with that tape recorder, they were able to listen to his phone call. And that information was used in an indictment. And Katz was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That was a search under the Fourth Amendment. And this federal government says, whoa, 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 yourself, that's not a search in the Fourth Amendment. You know, you don't have any privacy interest, or, you know, they didn't say privacy interest, but you have no Fourth Amendment issue in sound waves, you know, exiting the phone booth. Come on, what are you, crazy? And the U.S. Supreme Court said, not so fast, FBI. We know you like listening to people's phone calls. However, look at it this way. Did Katz expect privacy, right? I mean, did he expect that when he was on a phone call, you know, in this phone booth, that he should have had some private ability to have a private conversation? Absolutely. It wasn't like he was in a bar, you know? Ha, 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 ha. I sold so many drugs today. Rounds for everybody, right? That may have not been a reasonable expectation of privacy. But look at here, okay? The guy's in a phone booth trying to have a conversation with some counterparts. And the next thing is this something that society would expect to be reasonable, right? I mean, in other words, he's not asking for privacy in stolen cars. He's not asking for privacy in abandoned backpacks. He's asking for privacy in his phone call when he's lawfully present. Both are required, right? I like, what's up, Mike? Mike, my good friend, Mike is awesome. He said, you know, in DJ wiretap unit, in God we trust, all others we monitor closely. Okay, so this is a difficult test, right? This is, that test is good for people like, well, frankly, Mike Brave, who is one of the smartest people I know, you know, that knows the law, right? But for commoners like me, I need something simple because I'm a very simple person, and I like this test here. I use the 100-person test. You know, this is good for cops. Just ask yourself this, right? Do you think that if you told 100 rational people, hey, if I listen to your phone calls, right, while you're in a phone booth, do you think you should expect privacy there? And most people are like, yeah. Ask those same people, hey, if I overheard you talking at a booth in a bar, right, to another person, but I can overhear you, should you expect privacy? Most rational people will be like, eh, took a risk, right? Let's apply the reasonable extension of expectation of privacy to private searches. Okay, so here's the rule. The first rule we start with, okay, is the Fourth Amendment does not, I repeat, does not restrict private actors, no matter how unreasonable their actions, okay? So let's start with the Las Vegas. It's Atlantic City, okay? So let's talk about the Atlantic City case. Here is what happened. I say Las Vegas because that's what AI gave me and I'll take it. But what in Atlantic City, what happened is this. So the security guards are going to kick this guy out for counting cards. While they're kicking him out, they search him. They find cocaine, right, in his pockets. And they then call the cops. And the cops take the cocaine and they charge him accordingly. Then the defendant here, right, this guy named Sanders, he's like, oh, that was a unlawful search or seizure, right? Because they searched my pockets and they shouldn't have done that while trespassing me. But at the end of the day, here's the deal, right? At the end of the day, were those security guards agents of the government? And the answer is no, right? So I don't care how unreasonable people are. If they're not government agents, they're not conducting a search or seizure under the Fourth Amendment. And, you know, Blake says, by the way, he loves the AI graphics. I appreciate that, by the way, because we're really trying hard to make sure that we have the best slide deck in the industry. And we love the AI stuff is phenomenal. What a couple of people said, man, Anthony, when I look at an AI person, you know, it looks a little weird to me, right? And I say, you know, that's cool. I totally get it. It can be a little weird. But at the same time, it's amazing to get these pictures that kind of depict the case. All right. So let's talk about Bowers. In essence, I'm going to paraphrase a little bit and have I'm going to alter the facts a tad just to kind of give you the point here. Okay. So this guy, which I don't know his name, but this guy is burglarizing a house. And while he's in this house burglarizing it, he comes across a photo album. And he sees that in the photo album is child pornography. And of course, the guy who lives at the house is the person in the pictures. In essence, okay, he gives this photo album to the police. The police then use the photo album in a search warrant. Clearly, Bowers is unhappy because how was this photo album obtained? Through a felony crime, right? The guy stole it, right? At the end of the day, though, will the photo album be admissible in evidence under the Fourth Amendment in pretty much every single state? Yes or no, right? Okay, Amanda says yes. Mark says yes. Curtis says T, which means totally. And the answer is yes, right? At the end of the day, it does not matter what the private person did. This is not a law enforcement issue. The court said roommates went through the phone. Right, this is what they said, right? This is not a Fourth Amendment search. Okay, now let's talk about government agents. Change the facts, change the answer, right? When does a private search become a government search? Well, you have to have two factors. Number one is what did the cops do, right? Did they participate? Did they encourage it? Did they direct it? right? You got to do something very affirmative here. And number two, was the person acting on behalf of the police? Or were they doing it for their own reasons? So we have to have that. So police officers should not direct private people to do things that the officer cannot do. That's a pro tip right there. Obviously, they're like, hey, I really wish you can go into that that motel room and look around. I can't do it, but can you do it, hotel manager? You can't do that because you could probably turn that person into a government agent. Okay, let me give you some examples here, okay? A search occurred where a detective requested a motel manager to seize certain items in a motel room. Obviously, that is a seizure under the Fourth Amendment. All right. So that's this case, right? A search occurred where a police officer asked a landlord to enter a tenant's apartment to see if he was in there, right? No, right? I don't know why this picture is there. Okay. So a search occurred where an officer asked, here it is, a tow truck driver to search an arrestee's impounded vehicle at a tow yard. That just makes sense, right? You cannot tell a person to do something that you cannot necessarily do. Going into that room, go into that motel room, go search that guy's car, unless you have a recognized exception, a person that can give consent or a warrant. Okay. A search occurred where police provided false information to medical personnel to induce them, I can't make this up, to perform an invasive search of the person's rectum. Man, cops. This is 2014, okay? That's when this case was. What the hell were these cops thinking, you know, around, as it happened before 2014. But what were these cops thinking to do this, right? Maybe they need to go back to some basic academy stuff that you can't, you know, convert medical personnel into your agent like this. Okay. Then we have Reed. Police were present while a hotel employee searched a hotel room and agreed to be a lookout during the search. You guys see what's going on here, right? When the police are like, hey, we'll be the lookout here. We'll let you know if somebody's coming up, right? No, right? You are now involved in that search. You are now involved in that seizure, right? That's not allowed under the Fourth Amendment. You cannot be helping people violate people's rights because now you're involved in it. Okay, the hotel employee was an agent of law enforcement. Now we have State versus Smith, right? Don't you guys, I'm telling you, the AI stuff is killing it, right? It's absolutely killing it. So here, an officer working overtime at a nightclub ordered a patron to keep his hands up while a security guard pat him down and found drugs. This is very important because I know a lot of you, okay, especially in the South, work a lot of overtime gigs on the side, right? And you guys will be at these clubs, you'll be at whatever, you know, these bars, and you're just there for, you know, for just in case stuff hits the fan. And you'll be there and you'll watch the security guard, you know, want people, you know, maybe just, hey, checking IDs. But, you know, if you have a security guard that wants to be more invasive, like patting people down, you know, doing the wand and so forth, and you say, hey, keep your hands up, and you do not have reasonable suspicion that the person is armed and dangerous, and I don't know why you would, then that is a search under the Fourth Amendment and it has to be complied with, and you're going to have a problem there, right? Okay, this pat-down was a joint venture, the court said, between private security and law enforcement and violated the Fourth Amendment. A lot of cops don't know that, by the way. They think, well, I'm working security. I mean, that's what they want me to do. That's what they hired me to do. Well, if you're going to be in uniform and you're going to be acting in the capacity of a law enforcement officer, then you are not a security guard. You are a law enforcement officer. It does not matter that they pay you directly and so forth in some states. However, if the court finds that the private person would have done the same search without police direction, the evidence may come in. So this is an exception where, yeah, you kind of encouraged it. You participate, you know, not participated, but you asked the person to do something. But if that search was going to be done by that private person regardless, then there's an argument that we can probably save it, right? So Police asked the hotel housekeeper to separate defendant's trash from other hotel rooms. No search, since the trash would have been removed anyway, right? So that is regardless, right? The seizure of that trash happens regardless. However, when police asked private parties to do something that would likely not have been done, except for investigative purposes, a search is likely to occur, right? So what happened here is that the dog alerted on a UPS package and police encouraged UPS to open it. Despite the fact that UPS could open the package independently, this was a government search because, again, they probably, you know, they didn't know about the dog alerting. You're the one that tells them to, and you're also encouraging them. I guess, strictly speaking, the cops are like, hey, just so you know, package 123 alerted for narcotics, do what you want. Maybe that comes in, but not good practice, right? At that point, if you're looking to get into that package, just do it the slow way and get a warrant. Okay. Also, the Fourth Amendment applies if the private person tells the cops to search, right? So now remember, though, I want to just make sure we're clear here. If the private person tells the police to search and the police reasonably believe that that private person has the apparent authority to conduct that same search, we are good, right? There's no problem there because they could do it. However, if the private person is telling the police to do something and the police do not reasonably believe that the private person can do that same search, we are bad, right? We're going to have a suppression issue. So a girlfriend told cops that they could search her boyfriend's closet. The problem is, though, that the girlfriend did not have common authority over the boyfriend's closet. She's a mere guest, right? And she should not have been searching the boyfriend's closet. And if she can't do it, the cops cannot do it, right? This was a government search since the cops participated. All right. Now, let's get into cat out of the bag. Let's make sure I went to that kind of fast, but let's make sure we're good here, right? Here's our foundational principles. Number one, it is absolutely black letter law that private searches are not government searches, right? So if you have a private person that searches or seizes something, they can give it to you to use as evidence as long as you're not involved in it. Also, you cannot convert people into your agents, right? You cannot tell people to do stuff that you can't do. And if you do that, then that is a search under the Fourth Amendment. Okay, now let's talk about cat out of the bag searches. What do we mean by cat out of the bag, right? What the hell is it? What are you talking about, Anthony? It's a weird analogy. Here's what we mean. So Jacobson is a drug dealer, right? And he traffics narcotics through FedEx. This case went down in like 1981. And Mike Brave, confirm that for me if you get a chance. I believe it all went down in 1981. And I would love to know the city in Florida, right? So I believe it happened in Florida. But anyway, I just like to know that. I'm not positive about that. I might be making that up. Okay, regardless, FedEx damaged the package, right? And they were negligent in their, you know, in their damage. Like, in other words, it was their fault. Per FedEx policy, they are going to open up the package to see what was damaged, right? Hey, look, it is what it is. If it's a valuable item and we broke it, we got to pay for it. If it's something invaluable, we're not going to probably pay that much. In other words, we want to kind of protect ourselves from these claims. So after they opened up the package and they found this like cardboard cylinder tube, and they opened up the end cap and they dumped out the contents to see what they broke, right? If anything, and they found 4 bags of a white powdery substance. Suspecting cocaine, not flour, they put it all back together. They put it in the box at FedEx. They put a little piece of tape on it, right? And they called their friends at the DEA. When the DEA arrived, they we're told, right? Hey, this is what we saw, and the DA opened the package. They saw the alleged cocaine, and they also, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, did a field test kit. Now, this case, as I said, went down in 1981. Okay, and when I saw that, I'm like, I kind of understand what cops were like in 1981. Have you ever seen an old school field test kit for cocaine in 1981? I have. It looked like this. Right, Mark? Oh, that's some good shit. Okay, Trevor says it was 1981. And it was Minneapolis. Nice, nice. I should have known that, by the way. I kind of remember that. But I think Miami is because I'm tainting myself because of the cocaine joke. Right, Trevor? Would you agree with that? I kind of tainted myself because it sounds like a Miami thing. You know what I mean? All right. So now I made that joke, by the way. I don't know if I made that joke about the cocaine, testing the cocaine. I made that joke in, believe it or not, this is a true story, in Idaho many, many years ago. And this cop in the back of the room said, in a spontaneous utterance, he says, "I remember those days." And I looked at him in front of his peers, because this is Idaho. This ain't, you don't play in Idaho. And I went, anyway, we do a controlled delivery. The rest is history. We are going to the U.S. Supreme Court. And Jacobs is saying, hey, look, I know that I can't use the Fourth Amendment against FedEx. But when the DEA, right, opened up my package, that was a search under the Fourth Amendment. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, not so fast, right? This is not a search because you lost your reasonable expectation of privacy. In other words, who do you have to blame for all this? Blame FedEx, right? They're the ones that opened up your box and told the cops what was in it. Blame them. And I like to call this cat out of the bag, okay? Hold on. Do I have six? Oh, yeah. I got six fingers. So, hey, Rick, make a note because we're trying to fix these. So make a note that we have a six-finger cop. And by the way, Corey, I'm not trying to be rude, but why can't a six-finger cop, work in today's day and age? It's kind of maybe it's messed up. Maybe you should self-reflect on why you're ragging on a six-finger cop. Okay. There's an inclusion. I mean, it's an inclusion hire. All right. So maybe Mark is like, he wasn't asking about, hey, making fun of the guy. He's like, hey, where did you get these gloves? Right. Six fingers cop. All right. Everybody, we need hires this day. Right. I mean, if he's willing to work. So cat out of the bag. In other words, who eliminated that privacy interest? The FedEx or the DEA? And of course, it was the FedEx. Now, many states also refer to this as the silver platter doctrine, right? Sean, it is trademarked. I've been using that for 10 years, and I got a long lineage of proof to prove it. Okay. So this is also known as the silver platter doctrine. In other words, the way the courts look at it is like, hey, did the private person kind of hand over the evidence on a silver platter? And the answer would be yes, right? So there are two major restrictions. Number one is you cannot exceed the private search. Well, the suspect here, right, only loses their privacy interest in what was searched. If it's unsearched, they retain their privacy interest. And the other thing is make sure we don't lose any privacy interest in things that was not searched, but also you have to have lawful access to the item, right? So let's kind of go through this. I think like the best case to kind of prove this is this case. Here's what's going on. First of all, you can't use an AI picture, an AI. You cannot use an AI picture here because this is the actual hotel. This is a drug user staying at the Crystal Inn. And do you appreciate the irony? Nothing is better than meth heads staying at the Crystal Inn. So she calls up. She complains about bed bugs. The manager comes over. The manager knocks on the door. Nobody is in the room at the time of the knocking. The complainant is running around doing whatever, okay? But the room is still lawfully rented. The manager goes into the room, looks for these bed bugs, and finds drugs in plain view. The cops are called. The manager tells the officers what they saw, right? And the cop is like, hey, do you want, I'm sorry, the cop, the manager is like, hey, do you want to see inside this room, right? Sure. Show me what you got. Let's see what you got, right? These drugs. The cops go into the room and, you know, see the drugs in plain view and also see other evidence, including evidence of trafficking. Will cat out of the bag justify this entrance into the room? Yes or no? Right? Because the manager saw it, her private action. Now she is inviting the police. Are the police allowed to go into the room under these facts? No. 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 Okay. The answer is no, right? Not in any state. Not in, what's up, Corey? Not in any state. A landlord may tell the police about contraband he or she has observed. And the police, in turn, can use that information to apply for a search warrant. But that course of events does not create an exception to the warrant requirement, stressing that the United States Supreme Court had never extended the doctrine. What doctrine? Jacobson, to home searches or hotels. And we likewise declined to expand the doctrine that way. The hotel manager cannot give consent. There is no exigency in this case. There is no cat out of the bag. There's no silver plate doctrine. The hotel manager did not pull the drugs out of the room and hand it to the cops. We cannot enter the room. We are under these facts, what we are supposed to do is lock the room down and get a warrant. All right, let's look at these cases. Manager of storage facility entered defendant's unit and discovered evidence of a bank robbery. Police were called and saw evidence, but also viewed a film and took fingerprints. What do you guys think? What do you think about just entering the storage unit? Do you think we're okay with that? Under cat out of the bag? Entering the storage unit. Can entering the storage unit out under cat out of the bag work? Okay, Jeffrey is correct. Enter good, do more than that bad. Okay, Jeffrey is absolutely correct. Okay, this is not a home. The storage unit is a container. Okay, so this is the same thing as a backpack. So, but viewing the film and taking fingerprints was an illegal search. Jeffrey, you really impressed me on that one. Where are you out of? Are you a lawyer? Because that's you kind of nailed that one. Nice job. Where are you out of? Ohio? Nice. Love it. Okay. Good job. Good. Very good job. Okay. So let's talk about this case. Briefly, what happened is boyfriend, girlfriend at an apartment. They, you know, the girlfriend's on the boyfriend's phone. She finds child pornography. He then takes the phone back and she says, I'm calling the cops. He flees. He puts the phone in his car before he flees and he leaves. The cops arrive. She says, hey, the phone is in his car. I saw him put it in there. They do not cohabitate. They do not have, she does not have common authority. The cop says, do you have the phone? She says, I don't have it. I'm going to go grab it. She goes over to the car. She grabs the phone. Okay. At this point, was that a government agent? The answer, you know, we're kind of running out of time here. The answer was no, right? Because she was not told to do it, right? She was told not to do it. So, She then unlocks the phone. She then is looking for the child pornography. She does not find it. She hands the phone to the officer. The officer then unlocks phone, is looking for the child pornography. Now, here's the problem, okay? First of all, the cop shouldn't have done that because it's not a good practice. But even if it was a cat out of the bag situation, the problem is that she actually could not find the child pornography on the phone. And she said to the cop, and I quote, I can't find it. the CP, it's buried deep somewhere. And then the cop was looking for the child pornography, okay? Here's the problem. What if the cop found the child pornography? Why is that not still good? Why would cat out of the bag not apply? Why not? Why is it a legal search though? Why would cat out of the bag? Okay. Sean says he went beyond. Amanda says can't replicate the search. That's exactly right. You have to replicate the search. You cannot go beyond the search. And that's the problem. Cat out of the bag will not work here. Okay. That's exactly right. Right. Okay. Here's what happened. Employees of a restaurant are, told not to go into the manager's office if he's not there. Fine. One day, they want to watch some TV. They open up his office. He's not there. They want to watch some TV. They turn the TV on. It is connected to a closed-circuit television of a camera in the woman's bathroom. They then take this USB drive, and they watch it. They see a bunch of videos of motion-activated videos of women going to the bathroom. They turn that into the police. The cops then open up the hard, insert the hard drive in their computer. They look at the videos and they see the voyeurism, right? At this point in the story, will cat out of the bag save the government search? Yes or okay. So, okay, the answer is yes. Okay. And okay. Ryan says, I love this question, by the way. Ryan says, what are you talking about when you keep saying cat out of the bag? Okay. This is a phrase that not everybody's heard, and I appreciate that. Cat out of the bag is a saying that means that basically we know the truth. Okay. We know it's happening. Where cat out of the bag comes from there's a few origins, but the most accurate and probably believable origin has to do with a captain of a ship. And did you know, Rick, did you know this origin? Did you ever hear is this kind of new for you too? Okay. So what would happen is, like, think about a pirate ship, and the captain would tell his crew, get back to work. Right. And they were like, this is BS, captain. We're tired. We're done. And we don't want to work anymore, right? And they kind of like get out of line. The captain would then pull out a cat of nine tails from his pocket. A cat of nine tails is a whipping device. It has nine like leatherette balls at the end, right? Or like balls of leather. And he would whip the crew with it. And when the crew saw that, they would say, uh-oh, the cat is out of the bag, meaning we know it's going to about to happen. That is where cat out of the bag comes out. Kind of cool, right? Kind of cool. All right. Correct. We better get back to work. Okay. So back to our story with, this sounds like a non-union department. That's funny. That's really funny. So sounds like a police department in Arkansas. Get back to work, you know? So, look, this issue here, right? Did the cop know what was on the USB drive? And the answer is yes, right? The cat is out of the bag. Now, is that best practice, guys? The answer is no, right? Not best practice. Okay, a wife found child pornography on a hard drive that belonged to her husband, okay? She then turns in the hard drive to the police officer. They search it. They found the child pornography. Was that a good practice? Right, Sherry? The answer is no. However, will or can cat out of the bag, the private search doctrine, silver platter doctrine, whatever you want to call it, can that save the search? Yes or no? The answer is yes. Okay. As the court held here, when a private party provides police with evidence obtained in the course of a private search, the police need not avert their eyes. Rather, the question becomes whether the police subsequently exceed the scope of a private search. Okay, good job. Now, look, we can all agree, okay, that searching digital devices under this doctrine should be discouraged and used as a fail-safe. The better approach is exigency. Maybe you have exigency. You probably don't. Common authority. The wife actually, think about this. Could the wife actually provide consent to search that hard drive? Right? Probably. Why don't you just get her consent? Or search warrant, right? I am not teaching you, and I do not encourage cops to do this, but it can work. Right? It can work. And I'm glad that the guy got convicted. He deserves it. But it's really best used for physical devices, right? Or physical property, like backpacks. It's worked in cars and so forth. All right. So here's a situation. Let's see if this will work here. So what happened here is a guy goes to Hy-Vee. It's a, you know, convenience store. And he, you know, leaves his phone behind. A cashier opens up the phone. She sees child pornography on the home screen. She then calls the police. The phone, the cops swipe up. They see the child pornography. The defendant then now complains that this was an illegal search. Will cat out of the bag, will the Jacobson search save this? And the answer is yes, right? Okay. All right, let's talk about this case. So a computer repairman saw child pornography and summoned police. Cops saw several thumbnails and directed the repairman to display them in gallery mode, right? I don't know, best practice, maybe not, right? But will Jacobson save this search? Absolutely, right? Absolutely. This was not a search under the Fourth Amendment. There is no privacy interest because blame CompUSA, right? Blame CompUSA. Now, have you guys picked up on something? What if the cops actually see something that was never seen by the private person? Remember the videos in the bathroom? What if the employees say, look, we saw the first three videos and we shut that down and we gave it right to the cops. And the cops see videos 4, 5, and 6. Are videos 4, 5, and 6 come in? Emmanuel's actually laughing because of CompUSA. And that actually is the store involved in that case, by the way. Okay. Antoine, please share your chat settings. Please change your chat settings to everyone because nobody's seeing your answers, just so you know. And say, okay. And so forth. Let's talk about substantial certainty because that could actually save somebody's searches. Even if police exceed the private search, it may be saved by another doctrine if there was a substantial certainty police knew the evidence was similar to other evidence seen. So when a sicko is recording women in the bathroom, is there a substantial certainty that all the videos in that folder are probably of the same thing, right? Yes, right? When CompUSA calls the police and says, I saw child pornography in this folder, is there a substantial certainty that those CP videos and pictures are not mixed in with family photos, right? Or financial records? The answer is yes, right? So a mother found child pornography on a digital device and gave it to police. The police then searched the same device and viewed images that were not viewed by the mother. This was not a Fourth Amendment search because the police were substantially certain what the other images were. This case is substantially certain, right? Rann versus Atchison, Seventh Circuit, 2012. That's the case. Emmanuel, do you want to take a picture of it? I mean, just so you have the case, so you can, or tell me when you're good to go. Because that is, Rann is a really good case on this. And give me a thumbs up when you're good to go. You got it, brother. Okay. Also, Runyon. Okay. Ex-girlfriend entered ex-boyfriend's house and took several discs. She searched one of them and found child pornography and handed all of them to police. Police then searched all of the discs and found even more child pornography. Do you think substantial certainty will save this? Yes, no, 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 no. The answer is going to be no. There was no substantial certainty that the discs would contain CP and evidence was suppressed, right? So it has to be like, man, it has to be the level of confidence we're talking about here is like, you know what's in it. It's like, Your Honor, the idea is like, Your Honor, if I came to you for a search warrant, I'm wasting your time. Does that make sense, guys? And Antoine, the reason why is because are we positive, right? Are we positive there's child pornography in all these little discs? It wasn't like, I'm not trying to be sick here, but it wasn't like the disc said 13 to 15-year-olds, right? It didn't say something like that. They just happened to be, you know, in the area. Could they have had other things on them like software, financial records, and so forth? And the idea is yes. So unfortunately, it's not going to work. Now, look, here's the good news. You're welcome, right? Here's the good news. He got convicted, but not on all the counts, right? Not on all the counts. I'll tell you another case before we do some takeaways here. So there was a case where a guy was he gave like six boxes, okay, to like FedEx. And exactly, Corey. So he was. These six boxes. Okay, now FedEx accidentally opened, you know, broke one of them open. And it had like marijuana in there, right? It was full of marijuana. And these other five boxes had the same return address, the same sender address, right? You know, a recipient address. The font was the same. The box, the size of the box was the same. The weight were the same. And the cops opened up the other five boxes. And all of them had marijuana in them. Can we save the five boxes that were opened by the government, but not FedEx? Can we save that under these facts, under substantial certainty? Okay. And the answer was yes. And Antoine probably thinks, well, that's pretty similar to what you had, you know, in the other case, but not close enough. It has to be like, look, we know what was in there, right? We cannot say with a lot of certainty what was on those other discs. We're just presuming it was child pornography. All right, man, that's an intense webinar, isn't it? So major takeaways. Number one, private searches are not Fourth Amendment searches, okay? I do not care, and neither do you, how unreasonable these people are, okay? Number two, do not exceed the private search, right? You cannot, like, you can just ask these people, what did you do, right? And try to, you know, now substantial certainty is an exception, but we don't really want to go that route. And finally, get a warrant for digital devices and big cases. Why not? And guys, we do these webinars every single week. We are not done, by the way. We are going to do a search and seizure show in a few minutes here. Now, I'm not going anywhere, but I'm telling you, I'm not going anywhere right now unless Teresa tells me that people have signed up for some social media, signed up for Facebook, YouTube, TikTok. I don't care what you guys do. I'm not going anywhere. And I'm not going to do anything more unless you tell me you sign up for some social media. That's awesome. Okay. Rick, do you have the, Rick, there it is. Okay. And what's the date, Rick? What's the date for that class? Friday. Guys, we have a big one. Guys, you have no idea how big this is. So I teach search and seizure, you know, it's kind of common knowledge, you know, what people are supposed to know and so forth. But we have a class on Friday with Nick German, who is the preeminent social media expert for social media investigations. And he is doing free. I repeat, okay? He is doing a free class on Friday. What time is that class, Rick? Free. What time is that? Maybe Teresa knows. 4 p.m. Pacific time. You would be a fool if you did not sign up for that class. Hey, Rick, is that going to be recorded on demand? Or is that going to be a copy of the class or no? Probably not, right? They can get a copy? Kind of. Okay. So sign up. Rick will put the link again. You got to sign up for that class. There's going to be several hundred people there. So it is actually, it's going to be capped. We are probably going to have a wait list on that. So if you're looking to attend that social media investigations class, which is just interesting and fascinating, you should probably do that right now because otherwise you're going to be waitlisted. But it is free. It's about an hour-ish. And yeah, we have over, you have to be pre-approved for that, by the way. It's for law enforcement only or those people who are credentialed, right? Like prosecutors, government employees, expert witnesses for law enforcement and so forth. All right.